Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Good morning. Happy Monday. I'm Greg Hahn, President of Winthrop Capital Management, and with me on the phone, Tim Bond from Columbus,
morning, Greg.
Ohio. Tim, how are you, man?
I'm doing well. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. Thanks for dialing in with us. We're going to cover this morning's events. We got a lot to cover this morning, and it's a little bit of an eclectic thing, but I appreciate your helping navigate some of the economic issues, some of the commodity issues, as well as some of the stocks we'll talk about. But first,
sounds
let's
good.
Get into some of the economic news. The economic news actually is it's playing out as we would expect. There's a lot of positive news out there, particularly as it relates to the labor market. So employment last week, Labor Department released some figures that showed increases in blue-collar jobs, which is a real positive because we still haven't seen the acceleration in the job market as it relates to the service sectors. Remember that during COVID, the industries that were most impacted included travel, leisure, entertainment, conventions, the service sector jobs where there were massive layoffs. So the stimulus packages that came supported consumption in those sectors. But we expect the second half of this year to see more of an increase in that part of the labor market. In the meantime, though, we're starting to see increases in retail construction, package delivery, warehouse workers. So it's actually a good thing. And this relates to some of the issues around Walmart, Tim. As it relates to the minimum wage, we're seeing more of a push for companies to move the minimum wage up to $15 an hour. And Walmart announced last week that they were going to make that move, which joins, I think, Costco and Amazon and Best Buy at that $15 an hour rate.
Yeah, they now have half of their employees that have been moved up to the $15 an hour rate, and they kind of pledged to kind of continue to increase wages for their employees. You know, so it kind of weighs on them a little bit as far as margins go, but I think there's kind of been a shift from their executive team to kind of understanding they need to pay people a little bit more. And the market was a little bit upset with that. I mean, it traded down a little bit, but part of that too was just their online revenue growth kind of slowing a little bit. So there were some other things involved with that as well, but they're positioned well. You know, looking into next year, I think one of the best things that happened was, surprisingly, Jeff Bezos stepping down, right? So, one of the things, you know, they've been in deep, competition with Amazon, but, with Andy Jassy kind of taking over and him more focused on the AWS, side of the business, you know, hopefully the competition between the two will, at least be a little bit more stable and not as aggressive as Jeff Bezos has been in the past. So
Walmart stock was down 6.5% last week on this news of $15 a share. But I mean, at some extent, wasn't it expected? I mean, when your whole peer group is already offering $15 a share, it's going to have a near term dent in margins, like you talked about. But long term, with the increase in consumption, expected consumption with an economic expansion second half of the year, shouldn't that be okay for Walmart?
Absolutely. I think the best thing that Walmart has done this, well, in 2020 was start Walmart Plus. So in the first 2 weeks of that launch, 11% of Americans signed up for that program. And the important thing about Walmart and that program is in the past, they've really been targeted to a lower income consumer that would come in and spend their paycheck to get everything they needed for the next week or two while they waited for the next paycheck. Well, Walmart Plus, you know, that's the indirect competition with Amazon, and that kind of addresses a market segment that they could kind of grow into. So continue to see success on that front. So that's good news.
So we're seeing a lot of pressure in commodities, including copper, timber, just general price pressure in the commodity space, but also in oil. So we saw a spike in oil last week. Can you comment on that, Tim?
Yeah, definitely have seen it, you know, rise. But I think the surprising thing about the last couple of weeks has been, you know, the Saudis saying that they were going to pump more, and then the price continued to rise. Right. In the past, the Saudis have you know, kind of switched from their positioning last March when they basically crushed the oil market and said they're going to pump more. So for them to kind of switch and not being as supportive as they've been during the recovery and seeing oil stay strong is definitely good news. And I think that kind of strength also comes from the natural gas market with a cold kind of snap coming through the Midwest. You know, that's kind of helped natural gas. And so energy prices in general have benefited. But I know you mentioned it with interest rates rising, commodities, you know, kind of coming in as an inflation play, that kind of supports oil prices as well in that commodities basket.
Yeah, so we got really a combination of two things, the economic recovery, and then just that cold snap that you talked about, especially as it hit Texas, South Texas was brutal. We're seeing it at the gas pump. We're seeing oil prices. I think Brent crude was up $63 a share, which the stocks that we are more involved in, like Exxon and Chevron, the concern had been their ability to support their dividend. But with oil over $60 a share, they've got the cash flow prospectively to be able to support that dividend. I think the dividend yield on Exxon now is a 6.35.
Yes. Yes, it is very high, and it definitely helps them to be able to support that dividend. They've taken on, they've almost doubled their debt load, basically to cover the dividend over the last couple of years. So at least they've gotten back to the point where they're generating cash, you know, free cash flow beyond the dividend. So that's definitely a better place to be.
Yep. And Tim, really, that's been at the expense of CapEx, right? They really are underinvested in a lot of their infrastructure, which is troublesome going forward if they're not investing in their business. But
keep in mind, Greg, I mean, this all feeds back to the Texas energy crisis too, right? I mean, some of the CapEx, you know, drop was just that countries don't want thermal generation, right? And so they don't have to spend that money that they've spent in the past. But, you know, maybe this will kind of change some attitudes there. But I wouldn't think it'd be in a big way.
And Chevron's like, I think Chevron's dividends are 5.40 now or 5.39, something in that ballpark. Yep. So the move away from carbon based fossil fuels and into electric has really helped the demand for copper. So we historically have not been big users of commodity as an asset in our asset allocation because commodities, in the broad sense, have been just they're dismal performers. They don't work at the retail level the way they should the way that they do at the institutional level. However, I think there might be opportunities now to get more focused in our commodity allocation, especially given the demand that we're seeing for some of these raw materials like copper and silver. So the whole 5G build out is what part of what's putting pressure on silver as well as solar panels that use silver in their manufacturing. So it's an interesting time. So I think from a portfolio allocation standpoint, we'll be looking at how to use more focused commodities in our allocation to help with the inflation. Before we talk about the fiscal stimulus, I want to circle back to this issue on Bitcoin, Tim. Are you a Bitcoin person?
Not at all.
So I think my DNA is more old school.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I actually have talked to a lot of people that, like over the last month, just to get more educated on it. And I mean, I understand it a lot better after doing that. But I mean, it is very much a specialized kind of asset class. And then obviously, it's gotten a lot of attention and done well. But I kind of read through and kind of heard some of your comments on it. I could completely agree with those.
So my concern is the words digital and currency. So it is digital. I'm 100% bought into that. But as a currency, I'm kind of old school on the whole currency. It has to be stable, a store of value, and be recognizably acceptable. There's other issues around currency also, that it needs to be divisible and portable. you know, I think that would be one of them also, is that there's no question that a digital currency is portable. But it really doesn't fall under a regulator at this point, like our currency does through the Federal Reserve. But last week, the reason we're bringing this up is last week, Bitcoin went over 55,000 per unit. And it started out last year, 2020, at 7,000. So a massive surge in the value of the currency, which is why as a store of value, what goes up can go down. And I'm just not sure that I'm not comfortable with a currency that appreciates, right? But be it as it may, I think the total value of Bitcoin out there now has now exceeded $1 trillion. So
it really is amazing to see the growth in it. And it is interesting also the various types of cryptocurrencies, right? You've got Dogecoin and Bitcoin, and you have all of these things that are competing for that same kind of space. And I think at some point, I mean, I've read and heard the Federal Reserve is looking to do something in cryptocurrencies. So if they can kind of come out and maybe kind of join with some other global, central banks to kind of come out with something, I think that is kind of what I'm waiting for. So.
Yeah, so two things happened over the last 2 weeks. One is Tesla announced that they would take $1.5 billion and invested in Bitcoin, and also use Bitcoin as a currency to settle on its transactions for its autos, right? So they'll accept Bitcoin in payment for their cars. The second one, which actually I think is just as important, is BNY Mellon announced an initiative to allow its clients to invest in Bitcoin. So right now, the banking system does not support Bitcoin as a digital currency. So once the banking system embraces it, the Federal Reserve embraces it, then it becomes a legitimate form, I think, of payment. It changes the whole dynamic.
Which is interesting because, one of the things that people find attractive about Bitcoin is you don't have to, pay taxes. It's right. Basically, the IRS says, hey, do you have any Bitcoin? But I mean, a lot of people that have been involved with Bitcoin like the fact that it's kind of, it's below the board, so you don't have to report a lot of that stuff. So,
it'll be interesting. We don't use it in our practice. And, it's not something that I think is on the horizon in the near future. Let's shift on this issue. I want to circle back on what's going on right now with the fiscal stimulus package, right? So we've got a move up in interest rates that has been pretty sharp. We're off, the low in interest rates on the 10-year was a 0.5% last August, and we're up to 1.37 now on the 10-year. So that's a pretty significant move in the level of rates. But it's the one financial asset that hasn't reached its pre-pandemic levels. So arguably when as we normalize, we see equity markets have increased, commodities have increased, the level of interest rates, I think we were at a 180 on the 10-year in January of last year before the pandemic. So we're at 137. So I think our argument is that we've got movement in rates to go. And I think we'll probably test the 2.5% level towards the end of this year. As the economy, again, the base case here is that the economy accelerates the second half of the year. And that really, even in spite of what the Fed has been saying about keeping rates low, and supporting low interest rates, and they want to see inflation, but I don't think we're going to have as much trouble generating inflation in the system based on what we're seeing with commodity prices, employment, economic activity. And then the real question is, how much fiscal stimulus do we really need additionally to support growth? So, Tim, do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I know there's been a lot of press recently about it could possibly be too much. I think I don't know that you can kind of gauge that real well, but it will be interesting to see how quickly things come back. I mean, we've seen, like, with the hotels reporting last week, things are kind of recovering there. I think Norwegian Cruise Line reports this week they're basically expected to make zero revenue in the fourth quarter. So yeah, you're going to see some growth as industries just kind of not even get back to normal, but just start to grow again. Right.
Right.
And so to have money come to households to help pay rent, to kind of get back to normal. And as we talked in the past, you know, how quickly kind of our collective psyches kind of recover and we can get back out to restaurants and travel again. I mean, that'll be the kind of key thing to watch. And, you know, I know we're looking forward to getting back to normalcy.
Yeah. And I think with the intersection between the coronavirus and the vaccine, once the vaccine, in the base case again, is that the vaccine is effective in controlling the spread of the virus, but that once we really get traction, we'll see an increase in labor demand in the service sectors. And I think we could actually be talking about labor shortages in the second half of the year, the fourth quarter, when all of these entities are trying to hire people. And see if we still have an issue around the minimum wage. You know, the minimum wage is still 7.25.
That's incredible. Yeah. I don't know how you can survive on that low of a wage, right? Especially with the inflation and most everything. So,
yeah. Well, Tim, thanks for joining us this morning. Thank you guys for listening. I want to touch base with you guys during the week. If you got any questions, please don't hesitate to reach out to us and have a great week. Thank you.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.